kicks it off. Left circle, McNabb. Dorofeev, one-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin scores! Noah Hanifin powers
the goal. From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Thursday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. It's hour number two of the VGK Insider Show, so you know what that means. Chris Chapman, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck for hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
All right, so we were going to talk a little bit about Connor McDavid and the historic playoff run that he has had in the context of some other players' entire playoff careers. And we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. We're going to push the UFA conversation, Steven Stamkos, Sam Reinhart, where we expect those players are going to end up. We're going to push that. We're going to slide that to tomorrow because I want to get to some more of the mailbag questions here from the listeners of the show. 702-876-1340. If you have a burning question when it comes to the Vegas Golden Knights, get it in right now to the text line. 702-876-1340. If you send in a question, we're going to answer it. I know we've got a couple more that we haven't gotten to just yet, and I just feel like we haven't really done a fully Vegas Golden Knights-centric program in a long time. It's been a while since the Golden Knights have played. We've been preoccupied with the Stanley Cup final, and the beauty of having an extra day off here between games 5 and 6 is that we can get to a little bit more that doesn't just involve Connor McDavid being awesome, Matthew Tkachuk's back check, all of that kind of stuff. So Chris Chapman, let's pull up the text line one more time. Okay. Again, if you have a question that you want answered, 702-876-1340, send it into the text line. We'll do our best to answer it here. What do you got for me, Chappie?
All right. Well, Shannon wants to know, what are our thoughts on Alec Martinez? Will he retire? Will he be re-signed?
So as far as Alec Martinez goes, I think that you look at the player and you look at the commitment that it takes to play night in and night out in the National Hockey League. Do I think Alec Martinez can continue to play and play at a high level? 100%. I absolutely do. Now, we've had kind of this conversation before on Alec Martinez where with the Vegas Golden Knights, and I listed off the names that this team has under contract right now on the blue line, you have Petrangelo, Hanifin, Theodore, McNabb, Whitecloud, Haig, and Hutton. You've already got 7 NHL defensemen under contract right now. You've got Caden Korzak, who I believe can take the next step and be an everyday NHL player, if not that, a fully healthy 7th defenseman option, right? Like he's on the door, or he's on the doorstep. He's right there. So then you become a team with 8 legitimate NHL defensemen. You've got Lucas Cormier, who I don't think is NHL ready just yet, but is kind of pushing into that kind of waiting room area. And so I just think right now with this team, it's a little crowded. And so when it comes to Martinez, you've won the Stanley Cup 3 times in your career. You have really become beloved in 2 different places, Los Angeles, obviously, and here in Vegas. I think it's possibly a scenario where I don't see him back with the Golden Knights. And then as far as will he or won't he retire, that's up to the player, right? Like, I don't know. I don't have a good sense on what I think Martinez wants to do or where he's leaning. He's played a lot of hockey. He has played a lot of playoff hockey. And he's got a lot of mileage on those legs, on that body. It might be a scenario where you've done everything you could possibly want to do in this sport, and now it's just about the next chapter of your life. We didn't get a chance to talk to Alec at the end of season media availability, so I don't really have anything in terms of a leaning or an initial feeling based on a conversation. But I think the question here is, I don't know that it's going to make sense for the Golden Knights from a dollars and cents point of view and from a what they've already got in the cupboard on the blue line point of view to bring him back. And whether or not he decides it's his time, you look at it and you say it's been a hell of a career, and whatever's next for Alec Martinez, he's going to excel at.
Yeah, I think I'm going to base this on the fact that we did not get to speak to him at Media Day, and I'm also going to think back to when the Golden Knights lost to the Dallas Stars. The way Alec Martinez kind of took that extra moment to look up into the stands and the rafters while he was skating off the ice. I think he's going to call it a career. Obviously, I have no inside knowledge. I don't know Alec personally, so it's not like he's feeding me anything for me to know that. But I'm gonna go a little bit maybe further here and say I think Alec is going to have a home within the organization post-hockey. And I'm basing that on the fact that Alec Martinez is going to be part of the Battle for Las Vegas softball game, despite the fact that he's not under contract with the team. And I do think if he chose to play another year, I don't think it would be with the Golden Knights, because I think they have young guys that they want to bring up. They want to bring up Korzak. I think they want to potentially get Lucas Cormier and some of the other young defensemen opportunities to play at this level. Leighton Ahak, maybe another guy that we could see make his NHL debut this year. So I think you have a problem where you have young guys who you need to get NHL minutes. You don't have the salary cap to be able to sign, or you don't have the room in the salary cap to be able to sign Alec Martinez. But I think if he does retire, I think he's going to be remain a part of the organization in the same way a guy like Derek England has. Nick Holden is part of the organization, I believe. Who am I blanking on now? Cody Eakin shows up at VGK alumni events, but there are players who, once they become a good, it's almost like the Raiders. Once you're a Raider, you're always a Raider, and I think it's a similar thing with the Golden Knights, where when you're a Golden Knight, you're a Golden Knight for life, and Alec Martinez will forever be a cherished member of this organization. And I think he's a guy who is well liked, and I think he's a very intelligent hockey player, and I think he's a guy who could really help the organization, especially mentoring some younger players. So I think there is a home for him here, assuming he hangs it up.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you bring up, because, you know, in the same way we talk about Nick Holden and his responsibility now with the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, if you want to talk about a guy that could be a mentor, that can focus in on coaching or focus in on helping prospects within the organization kind of reach their potential, reach that next step. Like, I can't think of a guy better than, say, an Alec Martinez, right? Like, he has done everything there is to do in the sport. He has continued to grow and get better year over year over the course of his professional career. And he communicates the game so well. There's a lot of players, a lot of guys out there that can play really, really well, but they have a hard time kind of explaining what needs to be done, the steps you need to take, and how to become a better professional. I think Martinez has that in spades, and you're right. If he hangs them up and has a desire to move into a role, this would be a great spot for him to do that, and I think that there would be a lot of interest on the Golden Knights side of things to keep him inside the organization and around a lot of the players for a long time.
Yeah, why is it always defensemen like Nick Holden?
Well, I think, honestly, is it
because they just see the game differently?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think that there's a different way that you view the game as a defenseman. I think you can make the same argument for goaltenders too. Like, goalies see everything, right? When you're a forward, you're pretty reactionary as to what you are doing immediately. But as a defenseman, you have more time to read and react. You have more time to see the game. You have more time to understand, you know, different routes and different pressure points and all of those types of things, and really see structure in a different way. So I think that, you know, it's just based on the demands of the position and the level of knowledge and IQ that you have in order to play it really well, and then understand all those different types of structures and coverages that allow you to be a really good communicator of the game.
Yeah, by the way, Paul Stastny was the guy I was thinking of who I think is involved with the organization as well. So not a defenseman, but a guy who was a pretty good defensive forward in Paul Stastny. Mm-hmm. I remember having a conversation with him where he told me when he was a kid that his dad would ask him. Like, he told me he never watched video, which blew my mind. Mm-hmm. But then he told me, like, his dad, who, of course, was an amazing NHL player in himself, but when he was young and he was playing like youth hockey, his dad would quiz him, "Hey, fifth shift of the game, what happened here?" And he would have to like recall what happened on that specific shift. So maybe not a defenseman, but a guy who certainly saw the game much differently than some other players. But I think this question is really interesting, and it comes from Aaron, and he wants to know who is the number one goalie going into next season.
Okay, so I don't necessarily think this is a hot take in any regard. I think it's Aiden Hill. Very clearly, I believe it's Aiden Hill. And you look at who started the last two games of the playoffs for the Vegas Golden Knights when their season was effectively on the line. It was Aiden Hill. And as well as Logan Thompson had played at times during the regular season last year, certainly what he was able to do down the stretch with Aiden Hill injured. And you even look at his body of work in the playoffs, the four games that he played against the Dallas Stars, like Logan Thompson gave you solid minutes. But the fact of the matter is, you don't turn to a guy in the playoffs to play elimination games if he's not your number one moving forward. So in my view, I don't think a lot's really changed in terms of who the number one, or if you want to call it a 1A, 1B, a 1 or 2, doesn't really matter to me. I think it's Aiden Hill who you're looking at as the guy for you in the big moments, the big games, and certainly in the playoffs, and it's Logan Thompson behind him on the depth chart.
I don't disagree, but I think what we get is you're going to have a situation where Logan Thompson's going to play a lot. I think Aiden Hill is the number one guy, but as we've seen in the past, the Golden Knights, they play their backup, or their, I shouldn't even say backup, right? Because I think Logan would start on a lot of teams in the NHL, but they play their number two goalie a lot. Like, I think that's by design sometimes. I think they like to keep guys fresh, but You're right. For every reason you pointed out, you're not going to play Aiden Hill in your biggest games of the season if he's not your number one goalie. And I think that's the situation that we saw at the end of the season. I thought Aiden Hill played well in the playoffs. Once he got comfortable, he looked like the guy who helped them win a Stanley Cup last year. And I think he's always going to have that in his back pocket. That, hey, listen, Laurent Brossoit went down. I came in, and I was a big reason why we won the Stanley Cup. So I think Aiden is always going to be able to fall back on that, but I don't think he rests on his laurels. Like, I think he works hard. I think Logan Thompson works hard too. But I just think when it comes to it, I think Aiden is your number one guy, and Logan's going to have to be the guy who gets the call when needed, and he's going to need to play well when needed if this team has desires to go back and win another Stanley Cup.
Now, this is all standing here today and not taking into account what may or may not happen during the course of the regular season. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, I think that you're going to look at utilizing both guys, and that's just what it is. Is as much as the Golden Knights are a team that is built on depth and you need contributions up and down the lineup from everybody, the same can be said about the goaltending position, right? The goaltending department, as they've been called in the past. Like, you're going to get a pretty even split regardless of who your number one guy is. Like, Logan Thompson started 42 games last year for the Golden Knights. Aiden Hill only started 35. Now, he started 35, and the number was there because he had some injuries that he was working through over the course of the season. But I would make the argument that if Aiden Hill didn't have any injuries, those totals, those numbers would have been flip-flopped. And so in that situation, I think you're going to have to acknowledge that you need to rely on both guys. It's not going to be a traditional number one, number two type of scenario. And the only expectation when it comes to goaltending is if both guys are doing their jobs, this team should be able to win no matter who's in net. Whether it's Logan, whether it's Aiden, it doesn't really matter. Nothing really changes. You just have to make sure that you've got whoever your number one guy is ready to go and peaked for the playoffs and ready to do some damage there. Like, that's really all that matters when it comes to goaltending in the Golden Knights.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you pretty much nailed that. I want to get a couple more in before we get to break.
Okay.
And they are general hockey questions, not necessarily Golden Knight questions. But Wes wants to know, will Phil Kessel have an opportunity to end his streak as a member of an NHL team?
I don't know. Like, I feel like it's going to be a lot harder to go and sign Phil Kessel to a contract going into next year, considering the fact that he has not played in the National Hockey League in a year. And not to mention the fact, like, the Vancouver Canucks tried him out. The Vancouver Canucks had Phil Kessel join their AHL affiliate. They had him work through some practices to try to get him up to pace, and it didn't work out, and they didn't end up signing him before the trade deadline. And so if that's any indication, I think it's probably unlikely that Phil Kessel is going to get back into the National Hockey League. Can he help somebody? Probably. Are you, what kind of, like, what version are you going to get of Phil Kessel after not playing in the league for a year? I don't really know. So I don't think it's particularly likely right now.
Yeah, I don't think so either, because I think if he was going to sign with a team, he would have done so last year. Like, I don't think a guy at his age sits out a season and then comes back and plays again. Like, there were opportunities for Phil to maybe go play overseas and stay in hockey shape and maybe come back and have a tryout with the team this year. But I think for the simple fact that nobody re-signed him, nobody signed him in the last offseason, I just don't see it. And I don't particularly think the record is something that Phil thinks about. Like, he wants to win. So he's not going to sign with a bad team just to play games. Like, that would defeat the whole purpose of Phil Kessel going out and playing. The guy wants to win. He's a multiple-time Stanley Cup champion. So I think once you taste it, you always want to go back and taste it another chance or another time. So, like, I don't think Phil's going to just go sign with Ottawa just so he could play games. Like, I think if he did sign, he's going to want to sign for a team that's a contender. And I just don't know if there's an appetite from any of the contenders to go out and sign Phil Kessel.
So does the Iron Man streak continue, considering the fact that he missed an entire season of games? That
my take on that is, I don't know if it's controversial or not, but my take is it does because he wasn't in the NHL. It's not like he was on a team and was benched. Like, he wasn't in the league. So the streak is consecutive games played. Well, he couldn't have missed any games because he wasn't on a roster last year. So my take is, if he signed, like, hypothetically, he goes back and signs with the Penguins and he plays another 82 games, that's another 82 games added to the streak.
I'm inclined to think that way too. And I feel like it is consecutive games played that you are eligible to play. He's not eligible to play because he doesn't have a contract, right?
Exactly.
So in that scenario, it would continue on, but it almost feels disingenuous to a degree to have a player not play for an entire year because he was not signed to a contract, thus general managers looking at the player and saying, I don't think you would be a player for our team in the National Hockey League, and have it be all teams across the board telling you that, and then you continue on with your Iron Man streak if you get signed the following year. Like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I know they are very different scenarios, but hypothetically, what if there was a lockout for the entire season, or there was a strike for the entire season? The streak would continue when they came back and played, I would assume. And
I understand it's a different situation. But it's not a scenario where he's not, like, if there's a lockout, It's not about your ability, right?
Right.
That you didn't play. It's about the fact that the entire league was shut down. When you look at it from this perspective, the fact of the matter is if you don't get a contract, it's because there are teams out there, there are general managers out there that do not believe you can make an impact on the team. And then it becomes about ability. And if that's the case, it to me, it's almost as if you're getting healthy scratched. Now, I'm also going to argue the other side of it, whereas if you're not eligible to play, if you don't have a contract, like those games don't count against you. But it almost feels like this is a scenario where I kind of don't want to argue the semantics of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. And the other side of this is we don't know. Maybe a bad team did try to sign Phil Kessel, and he was like, "Nah, I'm good." Like maybe like what if Montreal came to him and they were like, "Hey, Phil, we want to sign you," and he's like, "Nah, you guys aren't very good. I don't want to play here." Like, I don't know, because at that point it sounds like maybe he's foregoing his chance to continue the streak. So I guess I could see both sides of it, but my personal opinion is the streak, if he signs with another team this offseason and he plays on that opening night, that's another game that goes on the streak.
Okay, that's fair. I'm okay with it.
Okay, so I think we have time for one more, and it comes from Stephanie. And again, a general NHL question. Do you think with Arizona moving to Utah, the divisions will get rearranged, or are they staying central?
I think initially they're staying central. That being said, can I see a scenario where realignment happens? Yes. Do I think it should? Probably. Now, how you go about realignment is anyone's guess. I would venture to say getting Utah into a division where you've got Seattle, you've got Vancouver, you've got a number of teams that makes a lot of sense, I think would be a good one. I've heard it bandied about, like, this idea that you put the Edmonton Oilers into the Central, but if you're going to do that, you have to take the Calgary Flames along with them, because it would be criminal, and I mean this sincerely, it would be criminal to have Calgary and Edmonton in two different divisions, because that robs us of more battles of Alberta, and I can't stand for that. So could you move, say, Calgary and Edmonton to the Central and bring Utah and Colorado into the Pacific? You probably could, but then it becomes really difficult in terms of the Pacific Division being an absolute powerhouse. If you've got Vegas and Colorado at the top of the billing there, all of a sudden you look at those two teams as being among the very best. So do I think realignment happens? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen anytime soon? Probably not. And then how much do you want to wait on maybe seeing if expansion happens beyond just 32 teams? I think that that's going to be an aspect of this that needs to be in play as well. Not to mention the fact that there is also an avenue for Arizona to get their team back if you get a land deal, you get an arena built and all of that stuff within 5 years. So I don't get the sense it's imminent, but I do think that eventually you'll see the Utah Hockey Club or the Utah Yeti or the Utah Mammoth or whatever name they're going to settle on in the Pacific Division sooner or later.
Well, let me preface by saying that I don't want to see any more expansion. I think 32 is enough.
I agree.
I don't think we need more teams. Like, it's perfect the way it is. You have four divisions of eight. Whether or not you want to change up the divisions is another story. But, like, I look at the divisions and I don't really think the league thinks too much about, oh, well, right today this division would be loaded, because just a few years ago the Colorado Avalanche stunk. So it's like, these things go in cycles, but I don't even really know if you could even make the case of moving Edmonton and Calgary to a different division, because they're west of Denver. So the idea of moving Salt Lake is okay, but I don't think you move Denver, because Denver is like under, well, I mean, you have to look at a map, but it's almost like the same general spot in North America as Winnipeg. So like they're not close together, but Winnipeg is almost directly north of, I'm sorry, it's not even close. It's Saskatchewan that I'm looking at. But Calgary and Edmonton are further west. So I don't think you move them to a division that's east of where they currently play. And you're certainly not going to move any of the California teams or Vancouver or Seattle. And Vegas is here. So unless you had another team relocate, like hypothetically Ottawa moved to Phoenix, then maybe you have that discussion, because Phoenix and Salt Lake are much closer to Vegas and the Bay Area and Southern California than Edmonton and Calgary. So maybe then you have the discussion. Or maybe if you get another team in Texas, you talk about maybe changing the Central Division a little bit, maybe moving Nashville east. But like there's too many variables at play here for me to see any type of realignment in the very near future.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can do things a little bit differently. Now, you can break it into quadrants perhaps, and that becomes a little bit more tricky when it comes to the Northeast, right? Like you've got so many teams concentrated in that area that it becomes really difficult. I don't understand why the Nashville Predators are in the Western Conference. Like truly, they should be an Eastern Conference team. But I could see a scenario perhaps where if realignment happens, you get different groupings of teams. So like in the scenario of the Pacific Division, instead of it being a Pacific Division, you could have San Jose, LA, Anaheim, Vegas, Colorado, Utah, and Dallas in one division.
You'd
right?
Do like Southwest, yeah.
Yeah, like the Southwest Division and the Pacific Northwest Division. And then, you know, you can do a lot of different things. So I still believe realignment will happen. I just don't know the avenue or the thing that's going to push that over the edge. But I do think at some point you want to freshen things up a little bit. I that's just kind of the viewpoint that I have on it, especially with Utah coming in. I don't know that they just need to be kind of a placeholder for Arizona, but at the same time, maybe that's just the way that it needs to be.
Yeah, I guess maybe if you were going to make some changes, what you could do is maybe move the Red Wings to a different division, and then because you have this Atlantic division, but what's weird is the Panthers and the Leafs are in that division with the Bruins, but then you look at the Metro and it leapfrogs New York and Philadelphia. So you have like a weird kind of setup where Boston and Toronto, they kind of jump over New York on their way to play their rivals in Florida. And to me, that doesn't really make sense. Then you have Columbus, who's kind of an outlier in the Metropolitan Division, although I guess it's not that far from Pittsburgh. But still, there's things you could do. Do they need to do it, though? I don't think so.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't know. I don't love the geographical divisions, and I guess that's probably my biggest issue. And listen, like I get that you're not going to have scenarios where you've got everything kind of jumbled together like it used to be. Like I know the Kings and the Maple Leafs aren't going to be in a division together anymore or anything like that.
That would be cool.
It would be cool. And that's kind of the thing where, you know, you probably have too many teams to get that done now, but I love the mismatch of teams inside of a division that weren't necessarily in the same time zone. It just created more unique matchups, and I like that more. That's just a personal preference. I don't know that we're going to get any closer to that unless there's more expansion, which I believe will happen, Chapman. Like, I think we're probably looking at 36 to potentially 40 teams, I would say, probably in the next 12 to 15 years.
Like 36, I can live with, because then you still have the divisions where it's an even number of teams.
It has to stay even.
You can't have like seven. Like when Vegas came in the league, you had seven teams in the Pacific, and then it was a goofy situation because you were short one team. But now I think with Seattle rounding it out, it's a nice even number. You don't have to have a scheduling because I think the Golden Knights played the Coyotes 5 times 1 year mm-hmm. in the regular yeah. season. And it's like it's weird because now they only played Winnipeg 3 times this season. So the imbalanced schedule and maybe that would be a better discussion to have another day is how do you balance the schedule out? Because I personally want more interdivision games, but I really love when teams from the Eastern Conference come here because you only get to see them once.
Well, I can tell you the only scheduling thing that I'll kind of throw out there and then we'll take a break is it is criminal if you do not play your division rivals at least 4 times a season. Like last year, Vegas played LA 3 times. It's not enough. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't care who needs to hear it. You need to play your division rivals at least 4 times a season. You have to.
Yeah, I think I said Edmonton. I meant Los Angeles. It's weird yeah. that you only saw them 3 times. Like yeah. that's geographically your closest rival.
Right. And you only played them 3 times. Yeah. Let's take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the BGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner. Centered one-timer score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
One-timers. News and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about Connor McDavid right now. And it's going to make sense why I'm bringing this up at this point in the show, because it's going to lead us into one of the other stories from around the National Hockey League today. Connor McDavid has 42 points so far in the playoffs this year. I'm going to give you some career totals for some players in terms of their playoff proficiency. Andrei Kopitar, 80 career playoff points. Steven Stamkos, 101 career playoff points. Jonathan Marchessault, 76 career playoff points. So when you look at it from that perspective, like so far in this postseason, Connor McDavid has more than half the career playoff point totals of Andrei Kopitar and Jonathan Marchessault. And if McDavid continues to go off, he can get close to half of the production in the career of Steven Stamkos. But here are the players that I want to highlight, though. Auston Matthews, 48 career playoff points. Mitch Marner, 50 career playoff points. William Nylander, 43 career playoff points. This postseason, Connor McDavid has essentially bested the career totals of 3 of the core 4 in Toronto. It's astounding to me. Like, and I've been guilty of this when it comes to Auston Matthews because he scores a ton of goals. Like, I value goals very highly. Matthews nearly scored 70 this year. There's no more argument of who the best player in the world is. It's Connor McDavid, and then literally everybody is a far and distant second, Matthews included. When you look at McDavid, and he is essentially put up in this one run through the playoffs, the career totals for Matthews and Marner and Nylander, and you look at where he's at historically with some of the greats in terms of players that have won championships, there's no debate at this point. Connor McDavid is the best player in the world. There's a lot of different ways that you can twist yourself into a pretzel to try to like diminish that. You can't do it. It's inarguable at this point.
Well, yeah, it's not even up for debate. I mean, I don't know how much of a debate that there really was as far as who's arguing that maybe those guys are better players than him. Maybe they have better seasons than him at times, but what separates Connor McDavid from guys like Auston Matthews and you know some of the other guys on that list, I'll take Steven Stamkos off that list because the guy's got 2 Stanley Cups. But what you think about is how many of those guys could put their team on their back and nearly single-handedly lead them to a point where they are one win away from potentially forcing, well, they would force a potential historical moment in the NHL, in the history of the NHL, a team battling back from three games down to win a Stanley Cup. I know it's happened once before, but we got to go back, like, before almost anybody listening to this show, and I would venture to guess maybe nobody listening to this show right now was alive when that happened. So you got to go back really, really far in the annals of history to find when it happened.
The 1940s.
Yeah. The point is, like, I don't think there's anybody in the league who could do what Connor McDavid's done with his team getting back into this series. I mean, he was having a phenomenal playoffs before these last two games, but 8 points in his last two games, he's single-handedly gotten the Oilers back in this series. It's unfathomable to me that there's even an argument. He's that much better than everybody else. When you look at the play that he made to score, to set up Corey Perry, who all yeah. Corey Perry had to do was not miss the net. Like, he skates through the entire Panthers team. And we've seen it before with him.
So, McDavid is the only player in NHL history ever with back-to-back four-point nights in the Stanley Cup Final. Gretzky never did it. Lemieux never did it. Bossy never did it. Like, there's nothing else you need to say in that situation. Now, here's why I wanted to lead with McDavid, especially highlighting the core four in Toronto. Paul Bissonnette said earlier today that he's hearing rumblings that the Leafs are working on a Mitch Marner extension. Why? I listen, here's the deal. If the Leafs go back to the well and re-sign Marner, I don't ever want to hear another word about change. Inevitably, in 12 months or 10 months, because it's the Leafs and they'll be out in the first round, in 10 months, I don't want to hear about how the Leafs need to change. I don't want to hear about how change is coming to Toronto. I don't want to hear about how all the options are on the table. If you re-sign Mitch Marner, you do not, as an organization, as a front office, you do not get to dangle the carrot to your fans that you are actually going to do something and change the course of that franchise. You don't get to do it because they don't deserve, the fan base doesn't deserve to have this idea of change dangled in front of them as it has been over the last couple of years, only to have the carpet continually pulled out from under them. If you're not going to move on from Marner, if you are legitimately going to re-sign him, you don't ever get to talk about change again. You don't get to complain about the fact that it's not going to work. You don't get to complain about another first round exit. You don't get to sit up there and say, well, we need to examine everything. You don't get to do it if you re-sign Marner.
Yeah, right. I don't understand why you make this move if it does happen. And listen, we found out Bissonnette is in the know. He's got his his connections and he knows what he's talking about. So I'm going to venture to guess that there's probably some validity to what he's saying. But to me, the Toronto Maple Leafs are, and I can say this as a long-suffering New York Jet fan, the organizations are one in the same. They are stupid organizations. They are in massive media markets. New York, obviously the biggest in the country. Toronto, the biggest in Canada. They make the same mistakes every single season. It never ends, and there's a reason why these teams don't win championships while you watch teams come from nowhere to win titles. They can't get out of their own way. They're constantly doing the wrong thing to I don't know why. Like, do the Leafs have trouble selling jerseys that you need to re-sign Mitchell Marner to maybe go out and sell a few extra jerseys? When I lived in Asia, that was the only NHL team that I would see sold in stores. Is the Maple Leafs. They had some kind of deal with Roots and the big department stores would sell Maple Leaf stuff. I didn't understand why, but I guess they are the team that is the most recognizable, yet they're not even lovable losers. Right? Like Ottawa is a lovable loser. Buffalo is a lovable loser. You want to see them eventually win with Toronto? I don't ever want to see them win. I think it's funny that they keep losing. There's nothing lovable about them.
With Toronto, especially if they go down this route, you just want it to continue. You want the circus to continue. That's literally what it is. I don't understand why you would do it. Listen, if you've got to go into next year and you've got to sit through another season with Mitch Marner because he's not going to waive his no-move clause, then do that and move on. But I just can't wrap my mind around wanting to see this song and dance return and return and return beyond the only year you have to have it happen. I just don't get it. I don't understand it. We'll see what ends up happening there. Those are your one-timers for today, Thursday, June 20th. Catching up with Chapman is next.
All right, Ryan, we are up against it, but we got one more comment on the text line I want to get to, and it comes from Ben. He says, if VGK for life is a real thing, then how does the team not do whatever it takes to extend number 81? Conn Smythe winner who was crucial to bringing us a Stanley Cup, leading scorer last season, VGK all-time leading scorer, regular season and playoffs, great in the locker room, beloved in the community, never gets injured. There's a little bit more, but I'm up against it. So I will say the reason that it may not be a thing, the numbers may just not work. Like, if they can make the numbers work, I think Marchessault's here. I think that's my thought on it. But, you know, you got to make it work, what's best for him and his family, and then what's best for the team. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that they get the job done.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's all for the betterment of the team. We'll see what ends up happening. We're back with you tomorrow, Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. That's going to be tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.